You need to take advantage of the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier 3-Pack. Everyone loves the Thunderstorm. It doesn't take up any floor space, there are no filters to replace, and it's only one-third the cost of those big, bulky air purifiers. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use discount code Howie.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail.
You got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, the millennial with the mic, The Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. All right, so some updates for you. I did get in touch with Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies. She's going to join the show at 1:30, which is excellent, because we're going to ask her about Karine Jean-Pierre's remark regarding the 90% decline in illegal immigration. We're going to ask her about the alleged killer in Texas, and we'll probably ask her about Senator Sinema's remarks on the Biden administration. So we have a lot to cover with Jessica Vaughn in just a short amount of time. I did want to alert people that the Atlanta police are investigating an active shooter at a building in Midtown. This is from CNN. It says the Atlanta Police Department tweeted Wednesday that it is investigating an active shooter incident inside a building in Midtown. Please shelter in place or stay out of the area. I did see that on Fox it says multiple injured in shooting in Atlanta. So praying for all of the people there. We will keep you posted as we learn more details. I've been looking for the last few minutes, and there's really nothing else out there about this just yet. A story that I wanted, before we get to this story, I just mentioned Karine Jean-Pierre, and she's had quite the week. And I would like to play a question that she got yesterday from Emily Goodwin of the Daily Mail. I played this in Howie's news yesterday, in Grace's news on Howie's show. And Howie made a great point. He said the only people who ask these kind of questions are people from the British papers, the British tabloids, you know, the foreign press. They want the scoop. They want to know things. The American journalists who used to know how to do this kind of stuff, they don't want to ask these questions. They want to ask questions like, when is the cast of Ted Lasso going to come back to the press briefing room? Or what has it been like for you to be part of this administration, this historic administration? But they don't want to ask anything that people might actually be interested in, which is where Emily Goodwin comes in. She was asking the Bidens, or she was asking Karine Jean-Pierre, why the Bidens will not acknowledge their seventh grandchild. This is Cut 10.
I wanted to ask about the trial going on in Arkansas with Hunter Biden and the child support. Are the president and First Lady monitoring that? And how come they haven't acknowledged the seventh grandchild?
I'm not going to speak to that from here.
Another question that I did appreciate was someone, and I, you know what? I should clarify this. On the day Karine Jean-Pierre said illegal immigration was down 90%, there should have been some pushback. There should have been a follow-up immediately. And I didn't make my bones as any sort of journalist. I don't claim to be a reporter. You know, I never worked a certain beat for a newspaper. That's not what I do. But I've watched them a lot. And I don't think that it's that difficult to come up with a logical question once in a while. I've given them a lot of slack here. I've cut them a lot of slack. And so the day KJP says it's down 90% illegal immigration, I think somebody should have said, where'd you get that? Where are you getting this from? Instead, it took 24 hours. But finally, somebody did ask her. This is Cut 9.
You said yesterday that when it comes to illegal migration, you've seen it come down by more than 90%. Where did that number come from?
It was,
because
I was speaking.
CBP is telling us the number is.
I hear you. I'm about to answer.
136,000 people more.
I'm about to answer
this
you.
Fiscal year so
if
far.
If the dramatics could come down just a little bit.
What's dramatic about asking a question about?
Okay, I'm going to answer. So I was speaking to the parolee program. As you know, the president put in place a parolee program to deal with certain countries on ways that we can limit illegal migration.
And okay,
we have
okay,
seen
on,
the data
on.
Has...
Okay, first of all, I gotta point something out. You know what she loves to say? As you know. That's another way. That's a really subtle way of trying to convince people that the reporter already agrees with you. Like, as you know, as you're aware of, we go way back. We've done this before. As you know, this is what I was talking about. Nobody knew that. How would anybody know that based off your comment? How would anybody know that? And by the way, bringing down the dramatics, he's asking a question. And the last time I checked, if you ask a question, you get to finish the question before the person takes over. A lot of times, KJP, you don't give any sort of answer, so the question is all we get. The question is what makes the air, because you can't comment on anything from the podium. You can't comment on anything from the podium. So, of course, people are going to want to get out, I don't know, their full question before you take over and start making excuses for yourself. Absolutely pathetic. Fox is running with, there's people who are in Atlanta who are streaming out of the building. I'll do a little bit more research on this and try to give you guys more details on what's happening there when we come back. But there's another story that I wanted to talk about here, because earlier this week, Jared and I were discussing Jeffrey Epstein. And Jeffrey Epstein was in the news because, I don't know if it was his calendar, it must have been his calendar, came out, and he had a lot of meetings with interesting people, notables, you know, sophisticated, serious people, and including a White House counsel for Obama, including professors, including very, very wealthy, powerful people who were all meeting with Jeffrey Epstein, including the acting, I believe, CIA director. And now there's another name being tossed into the mix. And this name might be familiar to you. And I would venture to say that the only reason that most people, at least this is just my perspective, the only reason I recognize this name is because it's been in the news a lot recently. LinkedIn billionaire Reid Hoffman visited Jeffrey Epstein's private island, planned to visit NYC mansion. If you want the full story, go to the Wall Street Journal. The parts of it I'm reading to you are from the New York Post. Billionaire LinkedIn co-founder Reid Hoffman visited Jeffrey Epstein's private island and had plans to stay at Epstein's notorious Manhattan townhouse back in 2014. Just want to note here that all these good Democrats, who, by the way, put up such a stink when they found out that Acosta in Trump's, not that Acosta, the other Acosta, was in Trump's White House and that he didn't put Epstein away for longer. All these Democrats set their hair on fire. He should have been in jail for a lot longer. At least Acosta put the guy in jail, period. The rest of these Dems, the rest of these liberal, charitable philanthropists, they were meeting up with him after his stint. They were hanging out with him long after that. So what's their excuse? But the reason I bring up Reid Hoffman is because that name is ringing a bell. Reid Hoffman, the LinkedIn billionaire, is the one who's backing E. Jean Carroll, the woman who's accusing Donald Trump of raping her. At some point, she doesn't have a date or a time or a year, I don't think. She makes Christine Blasey Ford's story about Brett Kavanaugh seem like it was full of specifics. That's how vague this story is. But he's backing up her legals. He's paying for her legal funds, or at least part of it. And she conveniently left that out when she was being asked about it. But Reid Hoffman, I have to wonder if he regrets getting involved with this E. Jean Carroll thing, because now it's piqued people's interest in him in general. Who is this man? You know, what's he all about? And luckily, thanks to the Wall Street Journal, I have a better sense of who he is. Hoffman paid a single visit to Epstein's Caribbean island, Little St. James, also known as Pedophile Island, where Epstein and gal pal Ghislaine Maxwell allegedly abused underage girls. Joy Ido, the then MIT Media Lab director, was also in attendance and had asked Hoffman and Epstein to help him raise funds for MIT. A lot of these people that were hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein were people whose job it is to just beg for money, beg rich people for more money. Ido confirmed Hoffman's involvement in the MIT fundraising on Epstein's island in an email to the Journal. He said, well, yeah, he just confirmed it. And then it says, Hoffman also penned an email to the Journal apologizing for ever meeting with a convicted sex offender. This is Hoffman, okay? I would say liberal hero Hoffman, because he's backing up E. Jean Carroll, who's suing Donald Trump. While I relied on MIT's endorsement, ultimately I made the mistake, and I am sorry for my personal misjudgment. But he does mention, like, I was relying on their endorsement. Just keep that in mind. But I take full responsibility, even if in the beginning of the sentence I kind of try to take half responsibility. I take full responsibility. Hoffman and Ido were planning to revisit Epstein Island in November of 2014. Following the trip, Hoffman and Ido were scheduled to travel with Epstein from Palm Beach to his tropical residence and then from the island to Boston. The intent behind the trips were not revealed. Well, if Jeffrey Epstein was involved, I think most people can probably guess what the intent behind the trips were. The documents also detailed Hoffman's plans to stay the night in Epstein's townhouse following a late-night flight to Manhattan on December 4th, 2014. In the morning, the venture capitalist planned to attend a breakfast party where the likes of Epstein and Bill Gates were scheduled to be in attendance. Yikes! That has to be one of the scariest sentences I've ever heard. In the morning, the venture capitalist planned to attend a breakfast party where the likes of Epstein and Bill Gates were scheduled to be in attendance. I don't even know what that means. And to make matters worse, if Bill Gates was there, I'm sure it wasn't like bacon or sausage at this breakfast party. I'm sure it was some sort of weird plant-based corn syrup strange concoction. And that was probably the best part of the breakfast party. Hoffman, who's now worth $2 billion, confirmed to the Journal that his last interaction with Epstein was in 2014. He invited Epstein to a dinner with Silicon Valley heads. It gnaws me that by lending my association, I helped his reputation and thus delayed justice for survivors. Oh, I'm sure it gnaws at you, Hoffman. I'm sure it does. Maybe that's why he's paying for E. Jean Carroll's legal fees. Because it gnaws at him so much that he wasn't more help during the Epstein days. Ido, meanwhile, resigned from his position at MIT following Epstein's 2019 arrest and apologized for accepting any money from the disgraced Epstein. Well, you know, everybody now is saying that it was the worst mistake they ever made. If I could go back, I wish I never met him. I wish I never met him. Well, hindsight's 2020. Hindsight is 2020, and all of these people are, you know, they run in high society, they run in the right circles, they say the right things, they put out the right statements, they vote for the right people, but they've all got a lot of skeletons in their closet. Don't you, Reid Hoffman? Don't you? We'll be right back. We got updates for you on everything, so don't go anywhere. And Jessica Vaughn coming up later on, plus Caroline Levitt in the 2 o'clock. Don't go anywhere.
The show that doesn't take itself too seriously.
I have a joke for you.
Okay.
The government in this town is excellent and uses your tax dollars efficiently.
It's the Grace Curley Show.
Not a joke.
The shooter in Atlanta is still on the loose. They're telling people to shelter in place. Multiple people are injured. And there is some security footage of him, so hopefully they'll be able to find this person soon. I feel like I'm given a cheat sheet here by Howie. This is from the Wall Street Journal, just because we're talking about Jeffrey Epstein. There's a lot of stories coming out now. It says, Jeffrey Epstein documents part two, dinners with Lawrence Summers and movie screenings with Woody Allen. Lawrence Summers wanted $1 million to fund an online poetry project his wife was developing. Well, don't we all? Like, who hasn't? You know, all of our spouses, right? They're developing an online poetry project that requires $1 million. This is just things we can all relate to. The former Treasury Secretary and one-time Harvard University president turned to Jeffrey Epstein. "I need small-scale philanthropy advice. My life will be better if I raise $1 million for Lisa," he said in an email. I guess it's happy wife, happy life. $1 million for the poetry project means smooth sailing for Lauren Summers. "Mostly it will go to make it a PBS series and for teacher training. Ideas?" question mark. 2 days later, they made plans to meet at the Fireplace, a cozy restaurant in nearby Brookline, one of several meetings the two men scheduled that year. Howie did confirm to me, said restaurant is indeed very cozy. Mr. Summers deeply regrets being in contact with Epstein after his conviction. That is a spokesperson for the couple. Among new details, though, it's all in the details here. The devil is in the details. Mr. Summers continued to meet with Epstein and seek his help years after Harvard decided it would no longer accept his donations. Wow. Where are the scruples? None of these people have any scruples. I would think they'd had scruples the way they talked when Trump was president, the way they would clutch their pearls at every comment. I thought these were scrupled people. And yet he's still meeting with Epstein even after Harvard says your money's no good here, which I'm sure you have to reach a pretty high bar for Harvard to start rejecting your cash. Reid Hoffman, a billionaire venture capitalist, we just mentioned him, visited Epstein's private island. And Ehud Barak, the former Israeli prime minister, visited Epstein dozens of times and accepted flights on Epstein's private jet. Mr. Hoffman said he met with Epstein to raise funds for the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and that he regrets interacting with Epstein after his conviction. Regrets. I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. The documents reveal how Epstein's friends sustained a relationship after his conviction in ways that were mutually beneficial. Epstein received help to repair his reputation and his friends received favors. So yeah, all these people couldn't help themselves, even if they knew that he was a sleazebag. He was a sleazebag you could hit up constantly for cash and for help. I'm going to leave a lot of this to Howie because he was able to really sift through this paper. There's more names in here that Howie's going to be able to tell you all about. 844-500-4242. Eddie, you're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Eddie.
Yeah, Grace, I saw something yesterday. I was quite shocked. This millionaire you're talking about that, with Epstein, it's also back in the defamation case against Trump, along with George Conway. Tacopino played a clip. There was a Law and Order episode from 95 or 96. It was the exact same circumstances as this woman's claim, that it was in Burdoff's and she was raped in a dressing room. Wasn't Saks Fifth Avenue, wasn't Bloomingdale's. It was exactly everything that was in that episode of Law and Order.
Yeah, so for people who are just tuning in here to what Eddie's saying, the billionaire from LinkedIn who was linked in with Epstein is backing E. Jean Carroll, who's suing Donald Trump for rape. And she's claiming Donald Trump raped her. Now, as I pointed out, and as Eddie's kind of alluding to here, a lot of her story, it just can't be nailed down. And I'm not disparaging anyone, and I'm not trying to claim to know it all, because who knows what really happened. But if you're going to accuse somebody of something as serious as rape, you should be able to at least point to a date or a year. I mean, how else can they defend themselves if you just pull something out of thin air? We've seen that before. Remember Brett Kavanaugh? We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
He has tools that he's used to make sure that we do this. We actually deal with the immigration system in a humane way. And in a way that actually deals with what we're seeing at the border. And that's why you've seen the parolee program be so successful. When it comes to illegal migration, you've seen it come down by more than 90%. And that's because of the actions that this president has taken. He has tools that he's used.
That was Karine Jean-Pierre, White House press secretary, joining us now to discuss that comment and really a total disconnect between the Biden White House and what's really going on at our southern border is Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies. She's the director of policy studies there. Jessica, thank you so much for joining the show.
Good to talk with you.
Now, I'm just going to let you take that cut, Jessica, and give us your reaction. As someone who sees the numbers, and your numbers might not match what numbers Karine Jean-Pierre is getting, what's your reaction to that?
I don't know how she can call these policies a success with a straight face. The only people that this is the Biden border policies are successful for is the cartels and the illegal aliens, because it's an absolute disaster for everyone else, for the border communities, for the communities where people end up, for the people who end up being victims of the illegal aliens who are allowed to stream in. It's a disaster, and it has not gotten any better. The numbers are not down. There were 1,000 people who walked into El Paso last night crossing the border illegally. It's been averaging 7,000 people a day. These are the worst numbers ever. It's not getting better at all. It's only getting worse, and that's because the Biden administration is just feckless. They want to let everyone in, but they want to pretend and they want the American people to believe that they're not. They don't want people to see the disaster, so they're trying to let people in a quasi-legal way, pretending that they're not coming illegally. But all they are doing is encouraging more and more people to keep coming here illegally, and not just people looking for jobs. They're absolutely encouraging and facilitating the cartels with the trafficking of people, including children, into this country for forced labor, with the trafficking of drugs and the trafficking of people for all kinds of other horrific purposes. And the bill is coming due with all of these cases that we're finding out now about not only the child labor trafficking that has happened facilitated by Biden's policies, but now also these tragedies like the family that was murdered in Texas by a 4 times deported illegal alien, and a man who was dismembered in Florida. I mean, the cases just abound across the country of the lawlessness and chaos that the Biden border policies have brought us.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned those stories, Jessica. We've talked about them at length on this show, but I think it's worth noting that at CIS.org, you guys have a news story up, and it says Texas massacre fugitive had death cult shrine suggesting criminal underworld involvement. Can you give people an update on this and just how atrocious this person was or is?
Yes. Thank you. This story is by my colleague Todd Benzman, who is in Texas and has been reporting on all aspects of the border crisis. And what he's learned is that the guy who's been arrested for committing this horrible murder of 5 people, his neighbors, he was apparently just shooting off his gun in his backyard. And the neighbors came over and said, "Look, could you please keep it down? Our baby's trying to sleep." And in response, this guy, Oropeza, went over to their house and murdered 4 people and basically, I think, was shooting at everyone in the house and then took off. They captured him. But what law enforcement discovered was that a number of things actually are coming out about him. He had been maintaining this elaborate shrine in his bedroom in his house to Santa Muerta, which is the patron saint of cartels and traffickers in Mexico, basically the saint of death, the Grim Reaper, that they worship and pray to, so that their so that all their drug loads will come over safely, and that the people they're trafficking come over easily, and that they can make more money and don't get killed, in their criminal activity. And so this is a marker that this guy, Oropeza, is involved in organized crime, likely the cartels.
And in fact, the woman who was that he was living with also had a criminal history of involvement in trafficking as well. So it looks pretty much like this guy was up to no good constantly, and certainly was not deterred by immigration enforcement from coming here. He was here illegally and had been deported four times, twice in 2009, once in 2012, and once in 2016, all under the Obama administration, which certainly did not have the reputation of being tough on illegal aliens and even criminal aliens. So he, you know, really came and went as he pleased, and we don't know everything he was up to, but it was no good for sure. He also, there was a restraining order against him his wife had received because he punched her at one point. And so, you know, here is a really violent person who should never have been here to begin with, who should never have been allowed to get back in here, who should never have been allowed to just keep getting released after repeatedly coming back here illegally. And now five people are dead because of it, because of our open border. And it's really a tragedy.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies. Depending, we already know this. I mean, it's just, it's the way of the world now. But depending on the narrative that the media thinks they can craft, that really has a lot to do with the details that they decide to focus on or decide to completely omit. And I have to assume, Jessica, that it must drive you a little insane, especially with all the work you're doing, that you'll see headlines involving this monster and they'll say things like Texas man. You know, or they don't really get into the specifics. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm surprised they haven't. Some of the news media outlets haven't referred to him as an asylum seeker or somebody fleeing violence in Mexico or something like that. They really sugarcoat this. They do not want to delve into the details. There were only a few outlets were even reporting that he was in the country illegally, much less that he had been deported four times before. They want the, people to focus on this as an argument for gun control. And, you know, they don't mention that this guy lived in a part of Texas that has basically become almost like a what we call a colonia, which is a settlement of illegal aliens. It's practically a no-go zone for law enforcement. And that's what they want people to think about. You know, they don't want people to realize that our policies could have prevented this crime.
Right.
And that not all illegal aliens are, you know, just humble workers, that many people are exploiting the open border for criminal purposes and for violence. And that always ensues when we don't control our border.
Jessica, there's another story that I would love to get your take on, and this is something that's been playing out for a while. Governor Greg Abbott in Texas is busing illegal aliens to places like New York City and Chicago, sanctuary cities, in other words. And now the mayors of these cities are very upset. They're asking FEMA to actually stop any sort of funding from going to Texas because of this busing. They call it, you know, human trafficking. It's cruel and unusual. Of course, if Eric Adams from the Big Apple buses people to the Canadian border, that's a totally different story. That's okay. But the reason I bring this up is because the latest is Eric Adams is claiming that Governor Greg Abbott is using this political stunt, as the left likes to call it, to harm black-run cities. And this is really a race issue. I can't help but notice that even when these political figures acknowledge that this is a national issue, that the administration in charge doesn't get any blame. And instead, we're blaming racism and we're blaming Greg Abbott and other governors. What do you make of that?
They want to blame everything but their own sanctuary policies that encourage people to cross the border illegally and make it to one of these places. He doesn't want to lay any blame on the local laws in New York that guarantee anybody who shows up shelter and social services and health care and job training and all the other policies that he's in favor of. they don't, you know, they're the ones who put out the welcome mat. And it's really ironic that they're the ones making the most noise now about how much it costs to accommodate all this illegal immigration and how it's going to cost taxpayers a lot of money going forward to support this disaster. And they, you know, their answer is to call out Republicans and accuse them of political or racial motives while demanding quietly from the federal government, their ally in the White House, the money from federal taxpayers to pay for it. And that's how the Biden administration is kind of diffusing some of this tension with these Democrat mayors in these big sanctuary cities, is to just keep giving them money to support all the services that the illegal aliens need. That's the silent agreement that they have, is that, you know, if you shut up, we'll make sure that you get money from the feds to, you know, so that, you know, to cover all these expenses that you're incurring. But they would never want to admit that there's any downside to illegal immigration, that it's nothing but a good thing for their communities and for our country. But they are, I don't think that's what the public sees. The public is seeing, yeah, we know it's costly and we don't blame you for complaining.
Right. And I think these border towns, which, you know, Kyrsten Sinema actually talks about, these border towns are thinking to themselves, well, how come nobody had a problem with it when we were burdening all of this? And, you know, everyone assumes we have the infrastructure to handle this. And in reality, as Jessica points out, and a lot of the people that work at the Center for Immigration Studies point out, there's no state in this country that is built for this. This is built for this kind of lawlessness. It just doesn't make any sense. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on. I know you're very busy. Can you tell people where they can follow you on Twitter and where they can read all of your work?
I'm at Jessica V underline CIS on Twitter. And through me, you can get to some of my colleagues. And everything we do is at CIS.org.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Jessica. Hope to have you on again very, very soon. When we come back, we've got updates for you. Someone just texted in and said, Grace, can you give us an update on Tucker? I'm reading that he made racist comments. Well, we talked about it in the first hour. Pretty much covered it. But we can go back to it a little bit. If you missed the first hour, you can always check that out at gracecurlyshow.com. And while you're there, you can vote in our poll question, which I heard through the grapevine is doing pretty well. People like this topic. To recline or not to recline? That is the question. You know where I stand. We'll go back to this in the 2 o'clock. Inflation's at a 40-year high. That's why you need to take advantage of the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier 3-pack. One of our listeners didn't buy just one 3-pack. He bought 2 of them, which is a really great move because there's so many different ways and places you can use this device. You can use it for a smelly kitchen, which you might not even realize you have a smelly kitchen. That's the scariest. You ever walk into your house sometimes and you take a whiff and you go, "Do my kitchen smell bad?" Sometimes it does. Sometimes there's something in the trash, or maybe you cook something, it's just lingering. You turn on the thunderstorm, you're not going to have to worry about that. You're not going to have to worry about those odors. It's also great for pet odors, for allergens, for whatever you're dealing with. And it doesn't take up any floor space. It's easy to use. Plug it into the wall. No wires, no filters required, just simple but very effective. With code GRACE, you'll save money and receive free shipping. Plus, a lot of these bulky big air purifiers, they're, you know, 3 times the price of the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. So go to EdenPureDeals.com, put in code GRACE at checkout. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Use code GRACE. Shipping is free, which is always a great move. That's EdenPureDeals.com, code GRACE. Okay, so when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Tucker. There is one more part of this Wall Street Journal story. We talked about Lawrence Summers. We talked about Reid Hoffman, the LinkedIn billionaire. But Woody Allen is also mentioned here. And I'm not trying to say this is going to ruin Woody Allen's pristine reputation. I think that ship has sailed a long time ago. But it is worth mentioning. We'll talk about that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
I thought the part of the Tucker Carlson text that people were really mad about was when he said that the three men beating up one other person, that's not how white men fight. I found if there was going to be anything offensive about the entire text, that was the most offensive. But what a lot of these network shows are focusing on is what he was saying about how he was hoping originally that the Antifa person got the crap kicked out of them. And then he reflected on that and he realized that doesn't bode well for him or, you know, for his soul, I guess, that's what he was hoping for. And it was very honest. And I know people aren't used to that kind of honesty. I know we're all supposed to pretend we're perfect. We're all supposed to pretend that we don't do anything wrong or we're not hypocrites. But I don't think that's Tucker's MO. I think Tucker Carlson's very comfortable owning, you know, his own flaws. And I didn't find that part of it to be offensive at all. I just found it to be kind of eye-opening and a little bit refreshing, to be real, because I'm sure there's a lot of people on CNN and on MSNBC and on the left who understand what he's trying to say, even though now they're going to act like, again, it's the pearl clutching that I can't get on board with. Hey, one more thing here, though, about Jeffrey Epstein. So all these documents are coming out, and we talked about how Lawrence Summers, the Harvard professor, former president of Harvard, that he wanted $1 million to fund an online poetry project his wife was developing, and how there was a lot of people involved. Reid Hoffman from LinkedIn, who's also now backing E. Jean Carroll up for her lawsuit against Donald Trump. And one person I forgot to mention here, and it's mentioned in the Wall Street Journal piece, is Woody Allen. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, today's poll question is brought to you by J.J. Manning Auctioneers. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. Matt, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Do you recline your seat on an airplane? Yes or no?
All right, so I'm getting a lot of texts about this. People say, well, there's degrees to reclining. You know, just because you recline doesn't mean that you go full out, full recline. I'm going to say, for the most part, no, I don't. Unless I know there's no one behind me, I'm not a recliner.
54% say no, and 47% say yes. That's, yes is gaining ground.
Wow. Okay, if your team reclined, I mean, get on the lines. Start voting now at gracecurlyshow.com. So here's what it says about Woody Allen. Epstein arranged for Mr. Allen to join dozens of dinners at his townhouse. Mr. Allen went with his wife, Miss Previn. Epstein's staff sometimes ordered Mr. Allen flourless chocolate cakes and bottles of Beck's beer. Woody and Soon Yi lived in the same neighborhood as Epstein and were frequently invited to dinner parties at his townhouse. There were always other guests at those gatherings. You know, out of all of the things in the Epstein saga, this to me makes a lot of sense. These two guys hanging out, that I do not doubt. There's nothing about this story. I don't need to fact check this. I just believe it after reading it. That's in the Wall Street Journal. When we come back, Caroline Leavitt, and then we're going to talk about airplanes. Don't go anywhere.